probably, you know, automated, right? But to me, I didn't know that then. And a certificate, and I've had for 5 years prior, this is my sixth, and I'm going to get it sewn on, and it's now in the garbage with spaghetti sauce on it.
No.
Yes, yeah, and that was my mom. She would go clean my room, and I had the Thurman Munson card from the New York Yankees, which was worth a lot, unwrapped, right? You know, he had died from the Yankees, and everybody's saying, you need to save these things. Gone. Just thrown out. And, you know, you shouldn't leave them on under your bed. You know, all those different things. So, and just like one more thing, you know, you lose a dog, you lose a cat, or her mother would die. Not much to shed a tear. My mom was a very, very strong person, and her answer to somebody was, to everything was, you know, ours is not to question why, ours is to do or die. She would say things like, you live and learn, tomorrow's another day, all roads lead to Rome, if we were lost. My mother, you couldn't rattle the woman, literally nothing. And so the things that were important to me, she would just tell me, you know, Mike, stop complaining about things that can be replaced. This, you're not talking about health. You're not talking about this. And so she was a very matter of fact person. And I think perhaps, you know, from there, is she proud of me? I'm sure she is. But I have a thing that I do with my mom, because she never ever said I love you up until just recently. So I would just say to, you know, Michelle, watch this. You know, I'd be putting it on mute and going, watch this. We're getting off the phone. All right, Mom. And she'd be like, okay, Michael, it's been great talking to you. Make sure to call your mother often. I haven't heard from you in 3 months. You should just call me for my birthday. Yeah, you're right, Mom. All right, have a good day. I love you. Okay, bye-bye. And I'd say to Michelle, see that? She can't say it. So about a year ago, I did one of those things, and she said, love you too. And I like literally almost like broke down in tears, because I was with Michelle, and I was like, I got all, you know, choked up. And I said, wow, she actually said, I love you. Now she's saying it more. But that's the type of, to tell you the difference of personalities between my mom and my dad. My dad wanted to be conversational, and my mother was, you know, here's your food. Hardworking, go to work, do shopping. You know, she was there to raise the kids, and you know, leave her alone. Let her go. Watch her things and TV. She liked to read books. And I'm not saying good, bad, or indifferent. My mom was the best mom anybody could ever ask for. She was just different than my dad. Very matter of fact. It didn't matter if you won or lost. You know, that type of stuff. You know.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, that in a way they've both influenced you, you know, encouraged you in different ways to become the person and the successful person that you are in terms of everything that you've achieved in your life. I mean, in terms of going right back to when you discovered your interest in marketing, What was the first thing that you thought, actually, this is the direction I want to go in? And, you know, I'm sure that you had the usual background of being encouraged to be a doctor or an accountant or one of these traditional jobs, if you like, but you chose a different way forward. Why was that?
Excuse me. So let's talk about what my parents expected from me. I was not raised in that family where there was certainly never like, you're going to be the president of the United States, right? And there was never anything like, you need to go to college, you need to become a lawyer, and you need to become a doctor. I don't think they ever spoke those words. Although my dad is really proud of his uncles that are doctors. Like that's the thing in their family. Many of his sisters and his sisters' husbands are either doctors or teachers. Like right. Education was the fact that you had an education and a degree was more important than anything to my dad. More important than anything. Having said that, my dad's dream was to have me and my brother own a car dealership with him. That my dad was an entrepreneur, and he instilled in me, being an entrepreneur. And you know, he was the type of person that said, you know, you need to do every job in the dealership, Mike. You should do the porter for a day. You should clean cars. You should do this. And he would say, he'd had this expression, it's not his, but he would say, you need to inspect what you expect. You need to have an understanding of everything down to its core level if you're ever going to manage it or understand where the numbers come from. So there was a lot of entrepreneurship. You know, he's talking to a 15-year-old when he's saying this stuff. Mm-hmm. He likes to hear himself talk. And I wonder where I got it from, right? So he literally liked to pontificate and intellectualize these different things, and so it got in me. So where did the entrepreneurial spirit come from? It's either in my DNA or my dad groomed me. Because I was an entrepreneur in high school. I started my love. So we have to go even before computer science or computer programming. I was a terrible student when it came to reading comprehension. I was the most interested kid in college in philosophy and psychology, but I would get a C because the way tests are done, they're done to play with your head. They're there to fool you. They're there. My mind isn't made for when you give me four different things in a paragraph yesterday, and the paragraph spoke about, you know, zero gravity. It spoke about G-force. It spoke about time dilation, all these different things. So I heard all four of them, and now you ask me a question that's multiple choice that has all of those answers in there. I had a great concept of those things. But if you're gonna, you know, ask me about, you know, an occurrence over Owl Creek Bridge, and I friggin' love the story, but you're asking me what was the daughter's name, and then you gave me four names, and I put the wife's name. Yeah, I failed in those things. But where I excelled tremendously was in math. I was the smartest kid in my class when it came to math. And what I found to be extremely tedious and boring was homework. I didn't have a discipline for it. When I understood something, I knew it in my core, and I did not like to do something 400 times, you know, 7 times 3, 3 times 21, and all like that stuff killed me. And even as a good math student, I wouldn't do as good as I should, because I'd never turned in homework. I was just one of those kids. I'm just being honest with you. What does it matter at 53 years old that I tell you these things? So when it came to math, man, did I fly through. I was so in school, they probably had it in the UK too. You know, I think we had something called basic, intermediary, something that started with a P, and then advanced. So I was in the second phase, you know, the average phase for everything. And then when it came to math, they put me in the advanced classes. I got 100 on the trig, algebra, geometry, and pre-calculus regents exams, the state exams. I got 100 on all four of those things. Wow. So what is coming up right in this time from a guy that's graduates in 1985, starts his senior year in 1984, so 83, 82, 81, 1981, I'm in ninth grade. 1982, my friend Mike Petruccio across the street, he doesn't have an Atari 2600 or an Intellivision. He has this keyboard thing that, what the hell is that? It's a Commodore VIC 20, and he's writing a computer program, for next loop with poke this and volume plus one, and he made the computer go. He hits run, and it goes, and I'm like, oh my god, he literally just programmed that, and I can understand what he did. I immediately, you know, gravitated towards that, then a Commodore 64, the Commodore 128, the IBM XT. I became a self-taught programmer, and very difficult back then. You know, you could barely even find books on these things. they weren't even teaching it in school. So by the time they're teaching it in school, who in the world is going to teach you computer programming in your senior year? It's a new industry. It's literally just popped up.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So what do? They send Mr. Weston, who's the math teacher, over to Stony Brook University to take a crash course in computer programming. And he puts his heart and soul into it. And he's coming in and he's teaching this thing. So 2 weeks into class, probably in the last week of September, he says, I'm giving you an extra credit exam. And this extra credit exam is due before the Christmas holiday. And here it is. I want you to put in Roman numerals and output the decimal answer. I got to tell you, this is not easy. And because here's why. What does an I represent in Roman numerals?
That is a one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, but it's also a minus one.
Aha.
Because if the number is IX, that number is 9, not 11.
Of course.
But if it's XI, it's 11. So when I have something like VII, that's 8. But VIIX does not mean 2. It's not 8 minus, or that I doesn't, is not 1, it's not 7, but, with the IX meaning 9. Like, so it was a very complex thing to know when do you figure out when you add a number or subtract it? When is that I not added to the previous numbers? But it's subtracted from the number coming to it. Extremely complex, in my opinion, probably a great extra credit thing. So what do? I go in, I learn about this thing called a midstring, and I basically, break down every character, and then I had to, create an algorithm that says if the number is greater than the number it precedes, then it's this. Else, it's if it's less than it precedes, and all these different things, and it's not working, and I'm up till 3 in the morning and 4, and finally I crack it in. Everything that I put in is now working. Now, the way it worked back then, you couldn't save your work, because they used a mainframe in the school, and I had a Commodore. Mm-hmm. So I printed my work, and I've got 70 lines of code. I get to the school at 7 a.m. My hands are shaking, and I hear the bell ring. I'm missing homeroom, because what happens is when you type it in and you hit run, it then says syntax error. Oh, shit, line 30. I type something. And if you know anything about programming, or if anybody hearing this, they're laughing right now. And then you had to do what was known as a proof. Right, so I had to now give the 5 different Roman numerals, and I put them in, and then it gives the output, and then I have to print the source code, and they're kicking me out of the room. Let's go. And finally, I walk into class with this Cheshire cat, just shit-eating grin, let's say. And I walk in, and I say, Mr. Weston, this is like week 2 of school. And the day after he announces the bonus, I said, and I've got like 17 pages of printed stuff, and I said, here you go. And he goes, what's this? And I said, that's the extra credit. And am I waiting for him to give me a hug? And he looks at it, barely looks at it. And he goes, where did you get this from? And you got to remember, there's no internet back then. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible to get this code offline. There's no GitHub. But in his mind, who showed you this? Who's this uncle that you know at the university? Where'd you get this from? And I said, I made it. I've got this smile on me. I made this last night. I've been up all night, and I ran here early this morning. And he goes, that's not possible. I said, why? Well, no, I did this. What are you talking about? He goes, because it took me a month to do this, and you're telling me that you did this overnight. And I said, Mr. Weston, yes. And he goes, explain to me the code. And I kind of did what I did to you. I said, well, you have to do this, and it's an algorithm, because you can't do this, and blah, blah, blah. So what I did is I created a midstring and all that. And he just looks at me and goes, huh. Still not fully believing me. And he goes, okay. And he puts an A on it, hands me the paper, and walks away. A very defeating feeling for me. Completely redeemed, as the year went on, because he would be doing, let's say, like a bubble sort, like how to sort random numbers into ascending or descending order. And he'd get stuck, and he would literally say, Mike, what am I doing wrong? And I'd say, do you mind if I come up? And he'd say, sure. And I'd come up, and I'd be working on the whiteboard with him like that. And he'd say, oh, okay, thank you, have a seat. And he learned to respect me. And he had suggested to me, what are you doing after school? And I said, I don't know. I think I'm probably going to get into the car business. And, my dad, he says, no, Mike, you need to become a computer engineer. I was like, well, what would they do? You can write programs and structure. And you gotta understand, back then, there was just, give me a job that somebody was doing computer engineering. We didn't know what we didn't know.
Of course. Mike? What year was?
1984. I graduated in 85. So this is 1984. Okay. And at that time, at that time, there's no such thing as iPhone apps. I just didn't get it. However, my dad is writing, is playing the lottery. And back then, New York State Lottery was two games for a buck, and he played 20 bucks. He played the same numbers every week. And so for 20 bucks, you got 40 tickets. And he played it on Wednesday and Saturday. So he'd get home from the car dealership, and Channel 5 News at 10:35 p.m. on Wednesdays and Saturdays would give you the winning number. And the sixth number is 17, and the supplementary number is 42. So my dad is falling asleep waiting for these numbers. He gets his ticket. He gets a pencil, because you couldn't computerize read your tickets back then. You had to circle them. And he would start circling, looking at the number, and you can imagine. By the third card, he's falling asleep. Dad, wake up. Oh yeah. hey, let's go to bed. And he put the cards on the counter, and he never checked his tickets, ever. They would just stack up. He had this literal stack of tickets that one day he's going to check. And we used to joke we might be millionaires and we'd never know it. So I said, what a great project. I'm going to write a computer program that stores my dad's numbers onto a disk, and every single week. So Dad, are you ready? Yes. Here's the numbers. Ready? 17, 22, 36, 42, 48, supplementary, 11. Enter. Oh, Dad, you got three, whatever. You won 12 bucks. Oh, cool. Which ticket? Whichever one has these numbers. And we loved it. It was great. So I realized that every state was different. Maine was five numbers. Some didn't have a supplementary, whatever it was. So I figured out the rules for all the states. Excuse me. I called a magazine that was where I used to, you know, go with my dad. They had, it was called Vera's Potpourri, and they had this magazine called Lottery Players Magazine. And it was for lottery junkies and information on all 50 states, strategies. You can imagine like what you would have for a casino, they had for a lottery in this magazine. They were doing all different types of ads. And so I'm reading these classifieds, and I said, you know, I want to put an ad there for my software. So I call up. I said, I'd like to place an ad. Sure, hold on. Guy gets on the phone. What do you want to do? These are the rates. You know, three lines is this, and it's going to be $125. Okay, I'll do this. All right, what's your ad copy? Go ahead, read it to me. I said, and I read the ad. And he goes, whoa, wait a minute. Are you telling me you have a computerized program that will check the numbers for all 50 states? Doesn't this sound like such a joke right now? But back in 1986, at this point, this was revolutionary, because there was no such. Most people were just starting to get computers. So you hear program, right? You know, IBM compatible. All these things were different terms back then. He was blown away. He says, "Where are you?" I said, "Long Island, New York." He says, "I'm in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Would you be able to drive out here?" I'm like, "I don't even have a driver's license. My dad can take me." He takes me out there. Makes me an offer, and he buys the software. He offered me $35,000 for the software, but since it was written in a Commodore and it had to be rewritten for an IBM, he offered me $25,000. And my dad said, "Take it." I sold him the source code. What did I have a need for it? I could still use it. So I instantly got the bug of being an entrepreneur. From that point on, understanding opportunities that were in the back of classifieds, I bought Russ Whitney, who is a friend of mine, and he lives here in Coral Gables, Florida. I've been to his home, and we've gone out to dinner. Russ Whitney used to be doing television commercials, how to buy real estate with no money down, and they had this thing called the bi-weekly mortgage. By making half a payment every 2 weeks, you pay your mortgage off in 19 years instead of 30, because there's 26 bi-weeks, which actually makes 52 weeks in a year. 26 payments bi-weekly is 13 monthly payments as opposed to 12, and that extra month goes straight towards principal reduction. So, I buy this Macintosh computer, and I'm knocking door to door, and I'm placing ads in for people, following his system. Go to the courthouse, find out who just got a mortgage, call them up and tell them that, they could save 10 years off their mortgage and blah, blah, blah. And I became an entrepreneur overnight. Everything that my dad baked into me, I became the junkie buying things, from Don LaPree, if that name doesn't ring a bell to you. He was a guy in the United States that would say, "I'm going to show you how to put a tiny classified ad in a newspaper that will make money, and then how you can do that in every single little newspaper and just get these checks coming in and blah, blah, blah." Obviously, that didn't work, or maybe I didn't apply myself. It was too much work. But I was that guy. I was chasing the dream. And I take computer science. And as I told you, there was no career path at that time that I believed in. And I had gotten married young. And my brother was in the car business. He was doing well. It's 1988 now. And he's making $50,000 a year. That's probably close to $90,000 a year today. And I just got married and I'm 20 years old. I dropped out of college and I got into the car business. And that's where I learned how to become a salesman. And I was in that for 14 years. And I was a piece of crap for 11. And I was fortunate enough to get hired into the largest automotive group, privately held automotive group in the country. And then I moved up the ladder very quickly to sales manager, to finance manager, to finance director, to general sales manager, then to general manager, back and forth between a Toyota and a Hyundai dealership. I ran the largest Toyota dealership in the Northeast region as general sales manager, and the second largest Hyundai dealership in the United States as a general manager. And we didn't mess around. My competitors did 70 cars a month. We were doing 500 cars a month. I learned the processes. I've learned everything about what it takes to build trust with people and urgency, scarcity, authority, all these different things I learned there. So real long answer again, but what created me to be an online entrepreneur were these accidents that happened, that my friend happened to have a computer, that I was a good math student, that I fell in love with it. I liked computers. I was the first person on the internet. I was addicted to watching Home Shopping Network and QVC when they used to have a computer every single week. You're going to get this with 7,000 pieces of software. You get the upgraded mouse and all. Oh my God, I need a new computer. Like I wanted one. I was addicted to that. Addicted to CompUSA. I was addicted to Gateway 2000 or Gateway Computers and then Dell. And I just always wanted the latest technology. So when this internet came out, and I read this sales letter from Frank Kern that's telling you that you could sell a digital product and take money from PayPal, this company that just came out, and it'll be in your bank account overnight, my head exploded. So I didn't have this thing that said, you're going to be number one at this. Never, because there was no industry back then. There weren't gurus, there were hacks, and I was one of them. But I said to myself, something said, oh my God, I think I'm born for this. I think this is, I'm not a career guy. I think this, and I got the understanding that this is going out all over the world. And when I put my first product online, and it was online for 3 days and I'm using a traffic exchange and all of a sudden I heard, and I looked at AOL, my eyes just opened right up and it said, notification of payment received, item number one, $19.95. My heart like literally just started pounding and I could hear it through my ears. And I clicked and I saw a customer name and I said to myself, there is something that I did that I created, that somebody wanted, and I wrote the words that made them want it. It was that simple for me. Wash, rinse, repeat. Get better at finding products that people want. Get better at finding out where they are,